sweeping over sun-kissed waters toward a jutting rock against a turbulent sunset, logotype Mar Vista Entertainment ripples up from the deep. A blazing sunset and its warm ripple reflection frame the rock's imprint. A white rhombus folds into an origami plane, it flies and rests next to a white word in capitals, Cartel. An aerial night view of a sprawled Los Angeles with lit buildings that fill the view far into the distance. A car cruises down the street, a gray-haired man behind the wheel and a brunette with a bun.
Well, this isn't awkward.
It's tradition, sweet pea.
Dad, I have told you, please don't call me sweet pea or honey when we're working or at the station. You know, it's hard enough for me to get the guys to take me seriously.
Okay, Officer McCullers.
You can never make anything easy, can you?
You know what? Screw them. Let them think what they're going to think. You're going to blow right by them and get your gold shield anyway.
I'm going to be running the station.
I don't know how I'm going to feel about working for my daughter.
Oh, don't worry. I won't play favorites.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
McCullers smiles at Dad. A man shakes fist on the street at a young man in gray hoodie who runs.
Damn, I thought it was going to be a slow night.
A car chases the man who goes right around a corner. The hooded figure sprints with arms flailing, then turns right into a dark alley. Car stops.
Chris, wait for backup.
Chris McCullers in a black police uniform. She chases after the hooded man. He attempts to climb a wall. Chris grabs him.
I'm sorry.
Jesus, what do you think you're doing? Get over here.
She pats him from behind.
Do you have any weapons on you?
No.
You're like 14, kid.
I'm 15.
Pulls chips out of his pocket.
Is this what this is about?
Look, I was hungry, okay? My mom hasn't been home in days.
Chris looks at his face, then reaches for her cuffs.
Look, I'm sorry, kid. I'm still gonna have to take you down to the station.
The kid flips around and steals her gun.
You don't have to do this.
The kid points the gun.
The gun down.
Dad in uniform with gun drawn. He teeters forward in the dark.
Just put the gun down.
You don't understand.
I'm coming in, Chris!
Dad stands, kicks a fence gate, and disappears past it. A view of the alley ground, blood stains on the metal surface. Chris lies on her back, clutching her left shoulder. Her mouth moves rapidly. Her hands move to her left leg. Chris thrashes on the ground, a puddle of blood next to her body. She looks to her left. The kid is sprawled on his back, motionless. Her eyes search and find Dad lying still on his back.
No.
A bullet wound through his forehead. Chris drops her head back. Fade to black. Title in white letters against a black screen. 911 Nightmare. An office with cubicles. People sit with headsets on. Text below, 6 months later.
First responders on the scene.
Officer in need of assistance, Tower 2 of the Kelly Court Project, 65 in progress.
Chris sits in a cubicle, her left knee in a brace.
Officer 220, hold position, 210 is flying in. ETA, 3 minutes.
She faces three monitors showing call details. A crutch rests nearby.
911, what's your emergency?
She clutches knee and winces.
911, what's your emergency?
There's a boogeyman in the house.
You sure?
He's big and scary, so I'm hiding.
She pops pills.
Where are your parents?
You think you'll find me?
Listen, kid, everything's gonna be all right. You just need to go back to bed. He'll be gone in the morning.
But the monster.
Listen, kid, this isn't a babysitting service to coddle you after a nightmare. You need to hang up so this line can remain open for emergencies.
I try to warn J.H.
Who's J.H.?
He's my friend. Our parents are friends, so we're friends.
Is he okay?
I think so, but he wouldn't listen. He's upstairs sleeping.
Which is what you should be doing. If not, I'm going to send over some real scary men to arrest you for tying up an emergency line.
But
I'm going to give you to the count of three. 1, 2, 3.
Chris wrinkles forehead.
Are you still there?
Screen shows 3 incoming calls.
No response, call terminated.
Chris clicks mouse.
911.
She's not breathing.
Okay, sir, I need you to calm down. I'm going to send some help on the way. Is she turning blue?
No, she doesn't have any color.
Sir, that's a good thing. It means she's still getting oxygen.
I don't know. Maybe gray.
Okay. Walking through with you.
Later, Chris limps forward in the parking lot at night, a crutch in her left hand. With a handbag over her right shoulder, she nears a parked car. She climbs in behind the wheel, puts her bag and crutch on the passenger seat. A corner establishment with a banner that reads, "The Bar." Inside, framed photos of police officers on a wall. Dad's smiling photo with words underneath, "George McCullers, 1982-2014. Chris sits at bar.
Here you go. You eating with us tonight?
Why not? The usual.
You did it.
Chris takes a sip of her drink and eyes a dartboard to the side. Her blonde hair tumbles to her low-buttoned shirt. A young man near the dartboard gazes at Chris. She averts gaze and sips drink. She sits alone at the bar. A TV behind the bar shows a baseball game. In the morning, trees stand near a three-story brick building. Inside, Chris sleeps on a bed. Chris stirs a little, then stretches and raises head. She rolls out of bed. Later, a woman works on Chris's knee on the floor.
Keep pushing against my hand as long as you can. Keep pushing.
Good, good, good. Good.
All right. Okay, it's loosening up.
Does that mean I'll be able to run in the Labor Day 5K?
In a couple of years. It's going to take about 2 years for you to get full mobility. And what's up with you answering the door without a brace?
Hey, okay. I get it.
No, you don't.
And what about the pain? Is there something else you could give me for it?
Not if you want to keep working and driving. It'll subside eventually. The fact that you can push at all, that's a step in the right direction.
Pun intended.
Chris, you almost lost your leg. Nerve, muscle damage, it doesn't heal overnight, not even in the next month. You need to be patient.
Chris lies on her back. She nods. During the day, cars rush by on the road. Chris reaches her office. She limps toward her desk past cubicles. A woman in the opposite cubicle stares.
What?
She nods Chris toward an office with glass walls ahead. A woman in a black top motions Chris over. Chris limps into the full office.
Arnold.
Chris.
Hey. New partner?
Mrs. Cortez. She came up through the valley.
Ah, good people over there. Is Sergeant Park still down there chewing ass? Mm.
Like it's his last meal.
Everyone smiles.
So, what's this about?
Chris, have a seat.
Chris sits on a chair by a desk. A computer sits on the desk.
Yeah, go ahead.
The woman with flowing brown hair taps keyboard.
911, what's your emergency?
There's a boogeyman in the house.
You sure?
He's big and scary, so I'm hiding.
Where are your parents?
You'll think you'll find them.
Chris tenses forehead.
Listen, kid, everything's gonna be all right. You just need to go back to bed. You'll be gone in the morning.
But the monster.
Listen, kid, this isn't a babysitting service to coddle you after a nightmare. You need to hang up so this line can remain open for emergencies.
I try to warn J.H.
Who's J.H.?
He's my friend. Our parents are friends. So we're friends.
Is he okay?
I think so, but he wouldn't listen. He's upstairs sleeping.
Which is what you should be doing. If not, I'm going to send over some real scary men to arrest you for tying up an emergency line.
Arnold sits beside Chris.
Last night, John Henry Blaylock was found murdered in his home at 1244 Braxton Street.
John Henry, is that the kid from the call?
John Henry, J.H. The other kid, the caller, was in the house with him.
You know, I have to say, it's hard being at a murder scene and discovering that 911 was dialed around the time of death.
Chris swallows.
So what do you need from me?
Just a couple questions.
You might want your union rep for this.
No. Look, they're just gonna tell me to keep my mouth shut and that will slow down the investigation.
So you understand your rights?
Chris nods.
Was there anything on that tape that we can't hear? Anything that struck you?
Chris ponders and grows restless.
I thought it was just some kid messing around, making up a story.
His head was bashed in with a hammer.
Chris puts a hand over her mouth. Her face crinkles.
Where were his parents?
A couple of drunks out getting wasted with the neighbors. That's who the caller belonged to. Their story is they came home and found him, but it's looking like they did it.
Chris puckers brows.
He said there was somebody there, a boogeyman.
There's a history of violence in this home. A pattern of them going out, coming home, and hurting their kid. Evidently, the caller didn't know this. That was the boogeyman.
If I thought that they were in danger in any way, I would have sent somebody. There were other calls flooding in that had higher priority. I thought...
Cortez takes notes.
I thought that they were putting somebody else's life in danger. I needed to get to that next call.
Chris rubs hand over mouth and covers eyes. Later, Chris fills out a form on a clipboard. Arnold and others stand outside the office. Chris notices a folder on desk. She glances over shoulder and grabs the folder. She clenches jaw and flips through documents. A photo of a man in a blue flannel shirt lying on his back. Chris stiffens. Her neck muscles pop. She closes the folder. Her supervisor enters the office and sits across the desk.
You all right?
Super.
The supervisor leans forward.
I'm gonna need to place you on leave.
Chris stares. Her lips quiver.
I need this job.
No, you don't. Disability covers everything you'll ever need.
That's not what I mean.
Standard operating procedure. When any incident like this happens, I'm required to put you on leave until the review board.
Chris clenches mouth and lowers gaze.
It's just the way it is.
Chris stands up and exits office. Supervisor breathes into her folded hands. Chris limps to her desk and grabs her bag. Bag falls on car seat, Chris behind the wheel. She ponders with hand on forehead, then hits steering. She slumps into her seat. An aerial view of city ahead. Sunlight falls atop buildings beyond a blanket of shade. Chris limps into the bar. A group of patrons with drinks in hand notice her. They huddle closer in conversation. Chris notices them, then limps forward. The man from dartboard with stubble hangs nearby. A man in half-sleeve t-shirt sits at the bar eyeing Chris. Chris sits at the bar.
Hey, whiskey? Double.
A glass of whiskey appears on the counter.
Thanks.
Chris sips. The young man with stubble A pairs.
Hey, you feeling like darts?
You're wasting your time.
And why's that?
Chris holds up her crutch. He shrugs.
So? I said darts, not sprints. I'm assuming you got that in the line of duty.
She stares at her drink.
That being the case, I can hardly hold it against you.
Thanks. It's very gracious of you.
You know, I was going to come up last night, but I didn't approach because being out in the street, I've learned to read people. My timing would have got me shot down.
Chris frowns at him.
Shot down? Is it supposed to be funny?
The man inhales.
Wrong choice of words. Sorry.
Chris nods, then focuses on drink.
Yep.
Chris takes a sip. The man smiles.
Okay, let's try this again. Why don't you give me your cell phone number? I will call you up and ask you out on a proper date.
Chris shakes head.
I don't have one.
The man twitches.
There are four-year-olds who have cell phones.
Yeah, well, I have a phone in my ear all day. The last thing I want is to have one on my time off. Look, who's putting you up to this?
No one.
You don't lose a bet or something?
The man stands.
All I was looking for was the chance to buy an attractive woman a drink.
He slams a bill on the counter and walks away.
Just one?
He glances at her. Later, they stumble into an apartment.
Okay. Yeah.
Light?
He turns on the light. Chris hangs onto him. She takes a step and stumbles.
Okay, easy stumbles. Let's get you to bed.
You're not joining me.
Nope.
He brings Chris to sit on a bed, kneels in front of her. She knocks his hands off her jacket.
Hot.
Knox, I'm just trying to help.
She struggles while taking her jacket off. She notices her bare shoulder and pulls up the strap.
It's attractive, isn't it? Stop. Stop.
She removes his hands from the knee brace and takes it off herself. He takes her boots off. She pushes the brace off her leg and lays on the bed. The man swallows with a sigh.
Good night, detective.
A view of the brick house in the morning. Chris sleeps in her bed. Sunlight falls on her face. Chris clenches eyes and rubs her face into the pillow. She notices a glass of water and some white tablets on the bedside table. She rises.
Hey, Chris. I just wanted to see how you're doing this morning, and I needed to let you know your review will be tomorrow, Tuesday the 24th at 10. Nothing like headlines to expedite these things, right? Anyway, if there's anything you need or if you have any questions, please give me a call in my office. Take care of yourself.
She grabs a cup and limps to a table with laptop open. She sits on a black cushioned chair. The Los Angeles Chronicle on screen. She sips cup and jolts. Ugh. She stands and limps off. Headline reads, there's a boogeyman. 911 operator ignores boy's cry for help. She returns to her chair, her eyes widen at the headline. The picture of a boy with dark hair covering his ears underneath the headline. Chris puckers brows and scrolls through the article. She notices comments below the article. Top comment reads, Boozeringo 37, I've always maintained and still do that Christine McCullers is a flaming moron. Underneath by Green Thumber 17, I say send Christine McCullers to the chair. That stupid BH, make an example out of her. She shakes head. A comment calls her an idiot dispatcher. Chris kneels over toilet. Chris sits on floor with back to wall. She breaks down. Letters on a stone wall read, Los Angeles Police Department. Chris sits on a chair inside, gripping the arm rests. Her light leg taps along. She stares ahead. Arnold and Cortez stride toward the elevator.
Hey!
What are you doing here?
Reporters have swarmed my place.
Well, you brought it on yourself.
Well, we did what we could to keep it quiet, but the parents' attorneys went out with it to divert some attention from them.
Yeah, they made a sensational case that much more sensational. Parents kill kid with a hammer, his cries for help go unheard by the person whose sole purpose is to hear those cries.
I want to help.
Well, you gave us your statement. That's all you can do.
You know we can do more than that. I'm not some high school grad who fell into a dispatch chair.
Chris, we're good. Case is coming together around the parents.
Chris ponders.
The kid said that something was...
Just chalk it up to another story. Because kids make up stories. Right?
Cortez shoots Arnold a glance and turns.
Chris, look, I know things are really rough right now. But trust me, all this noise is going to go away the minute they find another story to pump through the news cycle. In the meantime, just find some place to lay low for a couple of days. Okay?
Chris watches Arnold join Cortez in the elevator. Chris exhales. Later, she limps to a chain-link cage with a small window.
Hey, Kurt.
Kurt by metal drawers.
Hey, what are you doing here?
You hear about what happened?
Yeah. That's rough.
An elderly Kurt.
You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. Look, I know that this might be asking a lot, but I was wondering if I could crash at your place. Oh. It'd just be for a couple nights. The press is camped out at my apartment, and I really need to get away.
I wish I could. I just can't because my son's in town with his two sons, and we're a full house. I'm sorry.
No problem.
If you want, you need money for a motel or something?
No, I could never take money from you.
I owe your dad a lot of money just from the pool games I lost to him.
No, no, I'm good, I'm good.
Chris lowers gaze.
Come by again, okay?
Definitely.
Chris smiles and turns. An overhead view of the city streets between the buildings. Later, Chris at a hearing.
Please note that the operator under review 2304, Christine McCullers, has refused representation. We're here to determine what happened on the night of Saturday, May 22nd, and where procedure broke down, and to determine if any responsibility lies with operator 2304. So, Ms. McCullers, do you have an opening statement?
Four suited panelists across table.
No.
Play the call.
A suited man turns to a woman at a laptop.
911, what's your emergency?
There's a boogeyman in the house.
You sure?
He's big and scary, so I'm hiding.
Where are your parents?
You think you'll find me?
Listen, kid, everything's gonna be all right. You just need to go back to bed. Not in the morning. Listen, kid, this isn't a babysitting service to call you after a nightmare. You need to hang up so this line can remain open for emergencies. Mr.
A.H., my friend.
Supervisor exchanges glances with panelists.
Ms. McCullough's supervisor, Janet Bird, has requested to speak on operator 2304's behalf.
Janet addresses the room.
I've been in Chris's position before. For over 20 years, I sat where Chris sits. It's not easy to be judged for a split-second decision that can be carefully analyzed later over hours, days, weeks. This was a bad decision that had a horrible outcome. But that should not ruin her career. She's a good operator, and she deserves to be on the job.
Janet shifts.
The MDC is better with her around.
Chris gazes at Janet and lowers eyes.
Is there anything else that needs to be presented? All right, we will take a break while we discuss our ruling. Let's reconvene at 2:00.
Panelists rise. Chris stands up.
Excuse me, do you have an extra copy of the call transcript?
Later, Chris climbs the stairs with eyes glued to a paper in hand. She reaches the top of the stairs and limps onward. Arnold sits at a desk in an open office floor format with Cortez leaning beside him. Chris approaches them.
Hey.
What are you doing here?
You are like a gnat we just can't spot. I was rereading the call transcript.
Chris.
We don't need help with this investigation. I'm getting some coffee.
Cortez leaves.
Do you still make the parents for it?
Yep.
Well, what are they saying?
They're pleading not guilty. Big surprise. Capital case to be expected.
Well, say they're not guilty.
No forced entry. History of violence in the home. We can place them at the scene near the time of the death. What more do we need?
Don't you find it odd that the kid didn't identify the Blaylocks?
Chris, it doesn't mean anything.
It could mean something.
Arnold sits leaning back into his chair. He settles into his chair.
Why are you doing this?
I want justice.
Maybe this is about something else. Maybe this is about your dad.
Chris tightens jaw and straightens.
It's about justice.
But Chris...
Arnold stands up.
Suppose I find something that lends just a little bit of credibility to another theory, a boogeyman theory, and the defense uses it to cloud the jury's mind into thinking that the parents are not guilty, when in fact they really did kill their kid. How have you helped serve justice? Have you really honored your father properly?
Chris twitches, then grabs transcript.
I'm telling you, there's something here.
She hands it to Arnold.
Okay, I'll keep it in mind.
Thanks.
Chris gives a tight smile and limps away. Arnold watches her leave with forehead wrinkled. Chris glances back. Cortez limps toward Arnold.
Guess what?
I shouldn't have.
Chris tightens jaw. She takes a step and loses footing. Chris tosses the crutch into a bin and limps off. In a black suit with a brace over her knee, Chris descends down the stairs. A hammer hits the gavel at the hearing.
We understand the pressures this job entails, and we in no way condemn Ms. McCullers. It is regretful her decision led to a child's death, but it did. So it is our recommendation that Christine McCullers be suspended for a period of 2 months without pay, and during which time she will be required to attend a 6-week sensitivity course.
Chris scribbles.
We're dismissed.
Chris jolts straight. Later, Janet approaches Chris in the hallway.
Hey, Chris. The ruling could have been better.
It could have been worse. Way worse. If you hadn't said what you said, I... Thank you.
With all the talk outside these walls, I just want to make sure you get a fair deal. Look, nobody gets it unless they sit in the chair. Look, I know what you're going through.
Janet drops gaze.
Back in 92, I didn't dispatch a unit fast enough and a kid was beaten to death.
I had no idea. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I learned from it. And it made me a stronger, better operator. Look, I meant what I said in there. You've got a cop's instinct, and we need that.
Thanks.
What are you gonna do?
Chris draws in a breath, her neck veins pop.
I'm gonna make this right.
Chris opens a wardrobe. She grabs a black bulletproof vest off the hanger. She opens a wooden cupboard and grabs a wooden box off a shelf sitting beside VHS tapes. She lays the contents of box on table, a gun, an LAPD badge numbered 7167, a flashlight in a cloth sleeve, a pepper spray. She shuts the box. An aerial view of city nightlights. The man with stubble throws a dart at the board. Chris approaches him.
Hey.
Finally ready to play a game?
Look, have you heard anything about the case?
Case?
My case, the one with the kid and everything.
Sorry, haven't heard anything.
He throws darts.
Look, I don't think it was the parents.
And why do you think that?
Because the kid didn't identify them.
So?
You don't think that's weird?
Who's on the case?
Atlanta with Arnold and Cortez.
You need to leave it to them.
Look, I can do more than just sit on my ass and answer phone calls.
The man collects darts.
I'm here for help.
Help? Help you investigate a detective's active case? Sorry, but no thank you. That is a real quick way for me never to get a shield.
The man takes aim at the board.
Thanks for nothing.
Is this gonna hurt my chances for a date?
Chris storms off, then returns.
You know what gets me? If I'm wrong about the parents, then what's the harm? The killers are caught, it's just a few man hours that are wasted. But if I'm right, there is a killer of a kid still out there. And the way this went down, how it was pulled off, I don't think it's gonna be the last time.
Chris shoots him a stare, then storms off. The man watches her leave, then nods to self and throws the dart. Bullseye.
Yes!
A teenager with a soccer ball in a backyard with overgrown grass. He places the ball down, then steps a few paces away from it.
The U.S. needs this to win their first ever World Cup. All left up to the leg of the youngest player to ever field U.S. jersey.
He kicks the ball toward a decrepit goalpost. The ball flies beyond. The team jogs forward. He searches a short tree. He pauses and glances over his shoulder, then resumes search. He recovers the ball, then halts, then sprints across the backyard and runs around a railing up the steps. He approaches a door of the house with white paint peeling off and disappears inside. LA's skyscrapers against the horizon in the distance. Chris approaches a house in the suburbs with tapered rooftops. Yellow tape cordons off the front of the house. Chris exhales and tightens lips. She spots the adjacent house with a metal door. She heads over.
Who is it?
Police!
She steps back. A boy opens the door.
Hey there. Are you Stevie?
Yeah.
Is your mom home?
Stevie shakes head.
You tried to help your friend the other night.
Yeah, but he still got hurt.
Chris swallows and nods.
You thought you saw the boogeyman?
Yeah, he was like a shadow, but no one believes me.
Chris studies Stevie.
And you're sure it wasn't Mr. or Mrs. Blaylock?
They aren't boogeymen. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Chris lingers with a tight smile.
Thank you, Stevie. You've been a lot of help.
He nods. Chris swings the door shut.
You keep this door locked, okay?
A door with metal bars and metal mesh. Stevie disappears inside. Chris lifts the yellow tape. She approaches the front door bearing a large X made of yellow tape. She glances over her shoulder and puts on latex gloves. She sneaks inside. then closes door. Chris stands inside the dimlit house. She turns on her flashlight. Chris limps forward, shines flashlight around the house. She explores the foyer, then heads toward the stairs. Chris reaches the top of the stairs, then limps off to the side. A carpet with yellow numbered evidence scene markers spread over. Chris inches closer, flashlight beam lands on a spot of carpet soaked with blood. White satin curtains billow in the breeze. Chris approaches the window. Half open. She lingers and broods, then turns. Chris heads downstairs. She hops down the steps on her right foot, stumbles and flies into the banister. She sits on the ground, winces. She limps toward the kitchen table and takes a chair. Chris puts a hand over her knee and doubles over. Chris notices pictures on the wall, a picture of a woman's close-up. Another shows the woman smiling with the deceased boy sans the smile. A wall next to a chain-link fence, a roll of barbed wire on top. A guard ushers a woman in orange clothes.
Take that one. You've got 5 minutes.
The woman approaches a glass window covered with a metal mesh. She sits and grabs phone, then faces Chris.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Officer Christine McCullers. I'm the dispatcher.
What are you doing here?
I wanted to speak with you.
You want forgiveness for my kid getting killed? Screw you!
Chris bites lip.
I could never ask you to forgive me.
You let some guy kill my son. And you don't want to say sorry? To hell with you.
Look, I don't think you did it. Or your husband.
The woman freezes.
I might be the only one. I want to help.
The mother's gaze softens. She regards Chris. The women stand facing each other. They sit down.
Our lawyer keeps pressuring us to take that plea.
Chris puckers brows.
There ain't no way I'm going to stand before that judge and God Almighty and say that I killed my boy.
Have there been any strange people near the house lately?
The mother wrinkles forehead with eyes shimmering.
No.
Do you remember anything odd about the day he was killed?
Chris scans the mother, who drops head and fights tears.
I don't remember much. I don't even know if I told Jade tonight. I just remember blood. There was a lot of blood. He was always so scared.
The mother locks eyes with Chris, then wipes her nose.
I hope he had his blue with him. It made him feel safe.
What was his blue?
When he was a baby, he had a blue blanket. Always had it with him. We struggled. He struggled to let it go. We struggled that he wouldn't carry it anymore. He got to school, the kids, they made fun of him so bad.
Did he carry it in high school?
Hell no. Before middle school, his dad, he gave him one of his work bandanas. It was dark blue. He took it, accepted it as a replacement. That way, if he was scared or nervous or just needed good luck, he could have it with him.
Chris nods.
I hope he had his blue. It made him feel safe. I wish I could have made him feel safe.
The mother shifts, her with face contorts with emotion.
I wish
LAPD headquarters, Kurt in the evidence room scribbles on a pad. Chris arrives. She taps on the window counter.
Ah, when I said come visit again, I didn't expect it to be this soon.
Kurt approaches counter.
I need your advice.
Sure. What is it?
It's about the Blaylock case. I went to see the mom.
Chris, why would you do that?
They didn't do this.
You can't get yourself mixed up in that.
Dad always said you were a great investigator.
So you want me to be an armchair detective? I only know what I read in the papers.
Well, how would you approach this?
Well, I wouldn't start by going door to door. That'd be a waste of time. I'd go to the school. I'd talk to his friends, find out what this kid was about.
Okay, that's great.
Chris opens mouth and reflects. She licks lips.
The mom mentioned something about a blue bandana. She said he always carried it with him, especially when he was scared. Would you be able to check inventory to see if they bagged it at the scene?
Chris, you want to make me lose my pension?
No, of course not.
Kurt frowns.
I need to know if she's telling the truth.
I can't.
I want to fix this.
Kurt wrinkles forehead and stares at Chris.
Give me a minute.
He turns and leaves Chris, who glances around. Kurt types into a computer on a desk in the middle of the room. Chris ponders. Kurt returns.
No, there's nothing like that on the inventory sheet.
Okay. Thanks, Kurt.
Now get out of here before you get us both in trouble.
Kurt watches her leave. A banner over a building campus reads, William Stanley Spry High School. Chris sits in an office inside. She taps the desk. A woman enters with a young man.
Principal Norton.
Officer Chris McCullers.
Hi, Monty.
Hi.
Sorry about the wait. After school can always be a bit chaotic.
I hope you don't mind, but I've asked JH's homeroom teacher to join us.
Oh, no, of course not. Thank you for coming.
So you're here about JH?
Yeah.
Tragic. Just tragic.
I knew his home life wasn't the best, but I never thought it'd end up like this.
Well, that's why we're here. We're still investigating his death.
But his parents, we thought...
With all the publicity surrounding the case, we just want to make sure his parents aren't able to mount any sort of defense. We want to get out there in front of any possible theories and discredit them.
Okay.
Would it be possible for me to speak with some of his friends?
He was a quiet kid. Kept to himself.
Was JH bullied?
No, absolutely not. We have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to that.
Well, every school does, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. Was he being picked on?
Like, the kids I see who get picked on are the ones who put themselves out there in class. They answer questions, they volunteer, do extra credit work, things like that. JH, he just wasn't that kid.
Chris mulls it over.
Did he have a locker that I could take a look at?
It was cleared out. But I did keep the items in a box for his...
Monty tightens mouth.
It's in my classroom. I can take you.
That'd be great. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Monty escorts Chris to a locker covered with a green poster full of scribbles and photos.
He may not have been well known, but he was one of us.
Chris gazes at the locker. Flowers stick to the poster.
I didn't want to speak out of turn in front of Principal Orton, but we did have some problems with the janitor a few months ago. He got fired for being drunk and high.
Okay.
Well, for months we had a rash of locker thefts, and we never proved it was him, but we all suspected. It could be nothing. But you said anything might help.
What could he have taken from JH?
That's why I remembered. On the day it all went down, when he got fired, JH was the one who actually turned him in for acting strange. And that's how we found out about the booze and the drugs.
Chris broods. At night, a view of the house with white paint peeling off the walls. Inside, the teen plays video games with a joystick in hand. On the screen, a half-man, half-dragon slays the player avatar. The teen taps buttons, then jolts. The room goes dark. He rises and heads to a switchboard on the wall. The teen pulls out phone, texts mom, power out. Did you pay the bills? He taps, send. The text flashes a red exclamation point next to it. He checks text from mom, yes, check the neighborhood, then breaker. The teen pulls curtains aside and peeks out the window. The neighbor's porch light on in the distance. He steps into the backyard with a flashlight in hand. He moves down a few steps of stairs, ambles forward along the house walls, a view of the teen in the distance disappearing around a bend. He faces metal box on the wall. He lifts the cover and tinkers with fuses. He closes the lid, then peeks around the corner and swallows. He runs toward the open door with light inside. An aerial view of the city during the day. A tall white apartment building in the distance. Fist pounds on a door with stickers of no soliciting. Door opens a little.
Kyle Hall?
Yeah?
I have a couple questions for you.
Now's not a good time.
Chris grabs door.
If you don't open the door, I'm gonna let your parole officer know that you were uncooperative with an ongoing investigation.
Kyle stares. Kyle with a plate in hand, Chris enters his apartment.
I don't know why you're here.
I want to talk to you about your job over at that school.
I don't work there no more.
Yeah, because you were getting high and drunk and stealing from the kids.
I was in a bad place, but I'm clean. Okay, I'm clean. Back then, I needed money for my affliction. Don't think I don't feel bad for what I'd done. I didn't know it was wrong, stealing from them.
Is that all you did?
Yeah, of course.
Did you kill that kid Saturday night?
A lanky Kyle stares. Foil covers apartment windows.
I may be an addict. I may be a thief, but I am no killer.
Where were you Saturday night?
I was right here.
That's not a very good alibi.
It's the truth!
Well, that kid who reported you and got you fired from your job, he was killed Saturday night not too far from here.
I didn't do it, okay? That kid freed me up. He probably saved my life.
How self-aware.
I mean, not something I didn't do.
How'd you smash his head
don't
in?
Don't do this to me. I'm not going back
there.
I'm not going back. I ain't going. I'm not going back. I'm not going back.
Kyle swings and Chris draws.
Did you kill him?
I didn't do it. I didn't kill him. I didn't do it.
Chris pins Kyle to the door and puts the gun to his head.
Where's the stuff?
Stuff?
Where is the stuff that you stole from the locker?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes, you do! Where is the stuff you stole?
Okay. All right.
Hands up!
Chris backs away, gun pointed at Kyle. He passes her with his hands in the air. Kyle moves to the apartment corner and sinks to his knees.
Easy.
Kyle pulls a black case out of a box.
Put it on the table. Open it.
Kyle punches on a keypad on the case.
Step back. And put your hands up.
Kyle puts hands in the air, retreats to the wall. Chris steps forward and glances at the safe's contents.
Where's the bandana?
Phones and a camera.
Bandana.
Where's the bandana?
I don't know, I swear. That's it, that's all I have. I didn't do anything to that kid. I swear.
Chris glares at Kyle, her shoulders relax. Kyle's chest rises and falls. Chris scans Kyle and advances. She closes the case and grabs it. With her gun pointed at Kyle, Chris retreats toward the door. Chris exits the room. Kyle flops on a couch. An orange sun disappears down the horizon. The sky begins to darken. Chris reaches her place and finds the front door ajar. She draws her weapon and moves past the screen door. She moves through the place, her things tossed around. She enters the bedroom and stands against the wall, then barges into the attached bathroom. Empty. Chris examines her open medicine cabinet. Now with latex gloves and a soft brush in hand, Chris dusts surfaces in her house for prints. She pulls out sticky film and plants it over dusted surfaces. First a table, then medicine cabinet shelves. She rips off the film and recovers prints on it. Later she recovers prints from a doorframe, at about 5 foot height. She turns head to the sound. With gun drawn, she reaches the door and peeks through Q-tanes. Man with stubble from the bar.
Hey, come on in.
He enters with a small present.
What's that?
It's a gift.
Should I open it now?
She follows him into kitchen.
What happened?
Someone broke in.
What?
Yeah, I think it might have been JH's killer.
Why do you think that?
Because I went by JH's house in school. I think he followed me here.
Well, that was stupid. What were you thinking?
I lifted some prints.
She sets down recovered prints on the island counter. He picks up and mulls them over.
Okay.
What, you're leaving?
This guy's coming after you, and we need to know who it is right now. You stay inside, lock the door, call me if you need anything.
Well, I don't have your number.
Yeah, you do.
He turns and leaves. Chris approaches the present on the counter. She opens the colorful box and peeks in. A sticky note on a cell phone reads, "No good investigator should be without one." She turns it on and checks contacts, a number listed under the name Tim. Later the phone sits next to a laptop. Chris approaches the table by the cushioned sofa chair and sits. She checks headline on laptop and puts phone to ear.
Hey.
I was wondering if you opened it.
What, you checking up on me?
No, I was just checking to see if I wasted my money. But I'm also calling with some news. You got a hit on one of those prints.
Headline, operator on drugs while taking child's call.
Chris? You still there?
Yeah.
Did you hear me? We have a name on one of your prints.
Let me guess. Anthony Glass.
Yeah. But how did you know?
I'll call you later.
Article by Anthony Glass. Chris on phone.
What do you mean they're not even going to consider it? They've already ruled.
They were disappointed that neither of us disclosed that you were on drugs.
It's a prescription! God damn it! This is ridiculous!
Whatever the case, I'm not going to be able to have you back now.
The guy broke into my apartment! Unnamed sources is code for illegally obtained!
I'm sorry.
News plays on TV.
So am I.
Chris tosses phone aside and rubs her forehead. Breaking news on TV reads, parents plead guilty in boogeyman murder. The mother with a man cuffed on TV. Reporters follow them through a hallway. Chris puckers brows and swallows. An almost empty bottle of Jack Daniels sits uncapped on a table. Chris chugs drink on the couch. She sets down glass and gets off the couch. She checks the front door. Tim holds up a bottle of wine. A view of the old White House. Inside, the teen sits at a table poring over math homework. The lights go out.
Let me guess.
The teen checks switch and heads outside. With a flashlight in hand, he heads to the breaker panel. A dark figure emerges from behind the house. It sneaks inside the house through the open door. The lights turn on in the house. The teen jogs back and disappears inside house. He latches the door shut. Now he scribbles over the pages with a pencil. He jolts to the sound, then rises and approaches a toaster with a popped-up burnt toast. He grabs the toast, then drops cutlery and bends down. A man in black hoodie with face covered behind him.
Hey, I'm in here.
The masked man sneaks off.
Hey.
Hey, I thought you were going to be late.
I was, but I wanted to spend some time with you. My work will still be there tomorrow.
Can we go catch a movie?
Yes.
Sweet.
But go collect your dirty clothes first. I need to do a load by tomorrow.
Okay.
Dustin goes upstairs. His mom collects a cloth and saunters forward, then freezes. She notices the door unlatched.
Dustin, how many times do I have to tell you when you're home alone, you have to keep the doors locked?
She loads the laundry from the basket, Chris with Tim on couch.
No, there wasn't
when
a full
When did this
motor.
Start? I mean, no, I want to hear the boat story. Come on.
So my dad, he got this 21-foot speedboat, and it was named the Keel of Fortune because he bought it from someone who had won it on Wheel of Fortune.
That's bad.
It's really bad.
That's not good.
I didn't name it, so. Anyways, we go down to the marina, and my dad makes me the first mate, and I'm like 7 years old, maybe eight. And we get to the dock at the gas station, the boat gas station, and I jump off.
Chris with wine glass.
Onto the dock, and I'm going to tie up the boat with this rope, but the boat kind of went back out. It didn't stop, and I'm holding onto the rope, and it just pulled me right back into the water. Very excited, let go of the rope. Now, being seven and having seen Jaws, I was convinced that the ocean was just full of sharks waiting to eat any children that fell in the water. Oh, man. Yeah. That was the end of my sailing days. No more sailing career for me.
It's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Chris and Tim smile and reflect.
So when did you know you wanted to be a cop?
I don't know. It was just always like a part of me. Helping people, you know, I got that. And I got that from my dad.
They exchange a glance. Tim gazes at her and sips his wine glass.
And after I got shot, I just...
Chris tenses brows and stares off.
I felt like such a failure. Because the one purpose I had in life, it was just taken from me. And every day at work, I hated it. I hate it every single day because every call was just a reminder that I could no longer help people.
She tightens lips and shakes head.
And the funny thing is, the irony here, is that I was helping people. I was the first person helping people. And now that's been taken from me too.
You can always try and get reinstated.
No. I can't.
Can't or won't?
Chris shakes head to self.
Look, in order for you to move on, to truly move on, you gotta put the past to sleep. You gotta let it go.
Tim studies Chris at the other end of the couch.
Tell me what happened.
Her mouth opens and closes.
I went on a patrol with my dad. The department had this tradition of kids riding with their parents on a patrol.
Chris flashes a tight smile. It vanishes and her brows pucker.
We saw a robbery. And I.
Chris wrinkles forehead and clenches mouth.
I chased the perp down the alley.
Chris in uniform chases the teen in a gray hoodie.
Free!
Teen tries to scale a wall. Chris nabs him.
Is this what this is about?
I was hungry, okay? My mom hasn't been home in days.
Get down to the station. She's just up.
Teen grabs her gun and points it.
You don't have to do this. Everything will be okay.
You don't understand.
Just put the gun down.
I'm coming in, Chris! Back off or I'll shoot!
George advances.
It's all right, kid. It's all right.
It ain't all right.
Just put the gun down.
The teen shakes head.
No.
Look, I'll put my gun away first, okay? Let's figure out how we can all go home happy here.
George holsters gun with palm forward.
You're in total control of the situation, kid.
Chris reaches for a gun behind her back.
You can have your life. Petty theft don't mean a thing. Chris, no!
The teen shoots Chris, then George. Chris falls and shoots the teen who falls. Now Chris fights back tears.
My dad died.
Chris covers her nose with her fingers. They dig into her forehead.
Because of a bag of chips. Everything.
Tim watches her with head tilted.
Would have been all right if I would have just listened to him.
Hey. Hey.
Tim leans forward.
The kid did this. Whatever his reasons were, he caused all of it. He stole the chips. He ran. He swiped your gun. He shot you.
Because I reached for my weapon.
No, because you assessed the situation. You were doing what you thought needed to be done.
Well, that assessment killed my dad.
Chris gets off the couch.
You can continue to beat yourself up about it because you think you deserve this self-flagellation.
No.
She refills her glass. Tim approaches.
You deserve to be happy. If you haven't realized it yet, I want to be a part of that. You know, when you smile and when you laugh, which doesn't happen very often, but when you do...
Chris shifts and looks into his eyes.
Your whole face lights up. Drives me crazy.
Tim moves closer. He takes her face into his hand. They kiss. Chris breaks the kiss. She gapes at him and lingers. They share a passionate kiss. Chris leads Tim into the bedroom. Tim helps Chris remove her top. Chris in a black bra helps Tim unbutton his shirt. Chris climbs into bed on her knees. Tim stands by the bed. They kiss. Tim removes his shirt. He pushes Chris, who falls onto her back. Tim climbs atop her. They indulge in heavy kisses. Tim showers kisses from her chest down to her belly. He unbuttons her jeans and pulls them off her hips. Chris throws head back into the pillow with eyes closed and mouth open. Her fingers clutch at the pillow. Fade to black. Morning reveals Chris spooning Tim in bed. She rolls onto her back with a smile and jolts up. Chris props herself up on her elbow with sheets clutched to her chest.
Tim, wake up. Wake up. You need to go. I need you to go now.
What?
I need you to wake up and go, please. I need you to leave.
What are you talking about?
Can you please get up and get out?
Chris puts on a robe.
I don't understand. Did I do something wrong?
Look, I'm in a hurry. I have my physical therapy appointment and I don't want the distraction.
Tim reclines in bed. Chris stands away from the bed. He rubs his face.
Okay.
Thank you.
Tim climbs out. Chris disappears into the bathroom. Knee inspection.
God, what have you been doing?
Just some gymnastics.
Chris.
Look, I've been on my feet more than usual. It's no big deal.
You need to find a way to keep off your leg. You hear me? The more you aggravate your leg, the longer it's going to take to heal.
Okay.
Listen, I don't mean to scare you with this, but you continue this way with your leg, and you're going to jeopardize it. That means amputation. You really need to take a minute and think about this.
Chris ponders.
Okay.
Later, Chris, with a towel wrapped around her hair, she faces herself in the mirror. She lingers, then turns away. She grabs the phone off the bedside table and puts it to her ear, then stares at the phone and drops it on the counter in the kitchen. She notices the safe case, grabs it. A view of the high school campus. Chris brings the case to the principal in her office.
Here we go. Hopefully you'll find the right homes for those.
Later, Chris leaves the high school. She passes by a fountain. Monty ahead carries his bike.
Chris! Hi.
Hey, Monty. You're a brave man riding in this heat.
Oh, it's nowhere near as hot as Tucson. Plus, I'm not trying to be part of the problem, you know? What brings you by?
You were right about the janitor. I was able to get him to turn over some of those stolen goods.
That's great.
Yeah. Thank you for the tip.
You're welcome. I take it you heard about the parents?
Yeah.
Chris lowers gaze.
I don't get how a parent could take a hammer to their own kid.
Yeah. And that's something I was never able to wrap my mind around.
Wait. You don't think the parents did it?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's nothing I can do about it now.
Well, if there is anything that I can do to help, anything at all, please let me know.
I will. You take care of yourself, Monty.
You too.
Chris, with a badge on her belt, she passes Monty, then halts. She turns and watches Monty in the distance walking alongside his bike. She gets in the car and grabs cell phone. Chris taps into phone. Two young women chat while walking out the library. Monty saunters through campus along his bike. Monty approaches stairs. He carries bike over shoulder and descends. Chris behind the wheel watches Monty reach the bottom of stairs. He puts the bike down and rides off. Chris follows Monty down an inclined path through the green campus. An overhead view of the city skyscrapers. Monty arrives at a suburban house with a row of trimmed green hedges in the front. Chris pulls up by the curb on the road. She removes seatbelt and watches Monty carry the bike inside the house. Chris taps the steering wheel and reflects. She settles her head against her door glass and broods. Later, Monty exits house carrying his bike. Chris perks up and watches him. Chris reclines her seat back and lays on it. Monty cycles past her car. Monty rides off in the distance. Chris exits vehicle. Chris approaches the house. She glances over shoulder as she peeks in through the windows with blinds drawn. She reaches a door with metal bars and fine metal mesh, then digs into her pockets. Chris glances over shoulder and tinkers with the door lock. She opens the door and disappears inside. Indoors, Chris ambles over the wooden floor, WTH eyes peeled. She passes an olive green couch by the wall under windows with closed drapes. She pulls out gun and perks up. Mail slides underneath the front door. Chris tilts, head it. She collects the mail and sifts through it. She drops the mail on the floor, continues exploring the house. A dining table with open books and pads strewn about on it. Chris grabs a file from a metal rack on the table. She flips through it and puts it back. She flips through an open book on table. The front door's knob moves. Chris draws her gun and rushes to the side. Monty enters carrying his bike. Monty checks mail, then stiffens. He opens a cupboard and pulls out a gun. He pads through the house. Outside, Chris waddles forward on the sidewalk, glancing over her shoulder. Monty emerges out of the metal door and scans the outdoors, then rushes back inside. Chris reaches near the front of the house. She stumbles and falls in the grass. She winces and grabs her knee, then flattens her body as Monty emerges from the front door. Monty on the porch, he scans the street ahead. Chris lies on a strip of grass beyond the hedges, just out of his line of sight. The car sits parked in front of the house. Monty moves toward the front door. He glances around, then heads inside. Chris crawls to her feet, hops to the car, and gets inside. She gets behind wheel and grabs the seatbelt. At the bar, Tim and a small group.
The gate will open up, which is fine. He's like, yeah, yeah, hop the fence. So I'm hopping the fence. Seeing triple, 5 sheets in the wind. And I think there's this...
Hey, I tried calling you earlier.
Yeah, I know.
Tim sips his drink with brows raised.
Can I talk to you for a minute?
He glances at his group and drops gaze.
Please?
Tim nods at Chris and follows her to the side. They sit at the bar counter.
Look, there are things that I wanted to say to you. I just didn't feel right leaving them in a message.
So say them.
Here?
Mm-hmm.
Chris fiddles with a plastic straw, rests wrist over a napkin.
About this morning, I panicked. Last night was incredible. And when I woke up, I was scared.
And
I'm sorry.
You're sorry?
I'm sorry. And I need your help.
Wait, did you just say all those things so I'd help you?
Look, I think I know who the killer is. I went by the school and I ran into JH's homeroom teacher. And he said to me he couldn't understand how parents could kill their kid with a hammer. He knew about the hammer. That information was never released to the public. And I went back and I went through every news article and not one of them mentioned it. They all say blunt force trauma. He knew about the hammer. It has to be him.
Okay, that's interesting.
Tim ponders.
What else?
He's from Tucson. Is there any way that you could look into him without the department finding out?
That's it?
For now.
Tim rests hand on his shoulder. His finger begins to tap. He straightens.
Okay, what's his name?
Chris breaks into a smile. A view of Monty's place under the sun, a sprinkler on the lawn shoots water. Chris asleep in her car, bananas in a plastic bag beside an open Coke can. Chris jolts awake. She glances around, then rubs her neck. She sips cola and watches the house. Monty emerges out the front door carrying his bike. Monty gets on the bike. Chris perks up and observes. She reclines back in the car. Monty rides past her parked car. Chris raises head and gazes after him. Later, Chris explores the house indoors. She heads upstairs. She reaches halfway up, then draws her gun. A man downstairs.
Freeze!
Whoa, Chris, it's me!
Jeez.
Tim cowers.
What are you doing here?
I thought you might want the information that I got.
You nearly shot your head off.
Well, thank you for showing a bit of restraint. Let's get you out of here.
What'd you find out?
Here.
No, I have to check upstairs.
We're leaving.
He's not gonna be back till after school.
Chris, if we get caught in here, I'm off the force and who knows what they're gonna pin on you.
Just tell me what you found.
I will tell you when you get back in the car, which can happen now or when you've finished your search.
Tim shoots her a stare, then heads down. Chris lingers and glances up the stairs. Later, Chris on the sidewalk. She limps to her car. Tim in the car. He leans and opens the door as Chris climbs in.
Next time you decide to break into a house, take your cell phone, please. That way I don't have to break in after you.
Yeah. What did you find?
His jacket is clean.
You took me out of the house to tell me that? Thank you.
But I did ask for similar cases involving teens where the cause of death was blunt force trauma.
And?
Okay. So, in the last 10 years, there were 15 matches. 6 were attributed to gangs, 8 others had convictions, and 1 is still an open case.
Well, did you get a list of schools where those were at?
Yeah.
Okay, let's cross-reference those with the schools Romani taught.
I didn't get those. Do you have them?
No.
It's okay. We'll use LinkedIn.
What's that?
Tim with a pen in his mouth. Chris leans in and watches Tim's phone screen. He hands it to her. She reads Monty's resume on the phone.
Okay. You ready?
Yep.
Piedmont?
No.
John Marshall?
No.
Holy Cross?
No.
Ben Franklin?
Nope.
St. Mary's?
No.
Damn it! This has to be him. I can feel it. Look, let's go to the school and question him.
No, absolutely not. We be patient and we wait.
Wait, what are we going to wait for? For him to kill another kid?
Just be patient, okay?
Chris rests forehead against her fingers. She tightens mouth. Monty ambles on the sidewalk beside his bike. Tim spots him and reclines car seats.
Get down.
Tim and Chris disappear from view. Monty heads toward his house. He glances toward the car. His walk loses rhythm, then resumes. Monty continues toward his house, glancing over his shoulder. An aerial view of the city's nightlights. Now at night, Chris taps on the steering wheel, Tim asleep in the passenger seat. Chris shifts in her seat. Tim opens eyes.
Did you have a list of activities that the kids were involved in?
You mean sports they played?
No, like programs. Monty volunteered at the Boys and Girls Club.
Tim inspects papers in hand.
No, don't have anything like that.
Chris ruminates.
The unsolved murder, what was the name of the vic?
His name was Jaquan Jackson.
Chris taps into her phone. Tim glances over. Chris jerks and straightens up.
Son of a bitch. Can you check out his obituary? In Jaquan's free time, he enjoyed playing basketball with his friends. In lieu of flowers, please make a donation in his honor to the Boys and Girls Club. It's him.
Okay, Chris.
No, look, he knew about the hammer. All right, and what better person to know the details of a kid's life than his teacher? And now we have him connected to another unsolved murder. We have to get back in that house.
Tim glances at the house, then nods along at Chris.
Okay. Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
The lights in the house go out.
Chris.
Tim and Chris shrink. Monty exits the house carrying his bike. He sets it down and rides off.
Let's go back in there. Let's go in.
No. Here's the plan. I'm gonna go in and look for that bandana. You stay on him. Give me the heads up if he's coming back to the house. Okay?
Tim exits vehicle. Tim in a black hoodie heads toward the house. Chris drives the car around the curb. Later, Tim climbs the stairs indoors. Chris drives the car, Monty on the bike further ahead. Tim kneels by a dresser. He opens a drawer and points flashlight inside. He rummages through clothes inside the drawer. Monty turns a corner. Chris drives after him at a distance. Chris drives down a dim-lit street. She scans her surroundings. Headlights illuminate Monty's bike resting against a tree by the sidewalk. Chris notices a gray hooded figure scale a wall. She exits the car. Back at the house, Tim saunters over to a closed wooden door upstairs. He opens the door, points flashlight beam through the crack. He enters the door. Tim heads up the stairs with flashlight pointed forward. An unfurnished interior with wooden pillars, a wall covered with cardboard with cracks in it. Flashlight beam reveals a near-empty attic. Folded chairs leaning against the walls to the side. Metal cabinets with drawers sitting in the dust. A chest sits in the middle of the place. Tim takes it all in and continues exploring. Flashlight beam falls on a closed door. Tim approaches the door and turns the knob. He stiffens and shoulders the door, then steps back and kicks it. Tim's eyes pop.
Oh my god.
Meanwhile, Chris sneaks in the dark along houses with her gun drawn. She moves through overgrown grass along the wooden house walls. She peeks around the corner of a house. A window at a height ahead shows a figure in a red t-shirt moving around inside. A bulb turns on. It hangs from the ceiling. Tim explores the room. A wooden cross in the corner with a photo of the deceased boy stuck to it, along with a skateboard, a doll and a cap. A passage from the Book of Matthew scribbled on the wall next to it. Other proverbial passages scribbled on walls. Tim examines the cross and kneels. A makeshift shrine at the bottom with three thick candles, used. Three small bowls with candies inside, blood-like marks on a bald doll next to it. A circle drawn in chalk with symbols. A stack of diaries with names on the spine, Joaquin Jackson, Billy Naples, Ted Jensen, Sam Alcantar. Chris moves in the dark through the backyard with overgrown grass. She hides behind a tree, then emerges gun drawn. A black figure in the backyard.
Freeze!
Figure runs. Chris chases, then stumbles. She finds her feet and resumes chase. The hooded figure scales a wall ahead. Chris pulls out phone and limps off. Meanwhile, Tim points phone camera at the wall. Torn pages with scribblings nailed to the wall next to the circle with illegible signs and scribbles. Belt-like strips of a faded red color hang from the ceiling. Tim clicks photos. Chris drives down the road. Chris with phone to ear. Tim pockets phone, he edges forward toward the cross. A hammer hangs on the wall, Tim uses his pen to lift a piece of cloth near it. A blue bandana.
Damn it!
Chris puts phone down. Tim switches off the bulb, he exits the room. He checks phone, a text sent twice. Had to act, get out now on his way back. Tim sprints toward the stairs. Tim reaches bottom of stairs and halts. He faces a gun. The car arrives outside the house.
No!
Chris runs out of the vehicle. She enters the house.
Tim!
attic.
Tim lies on his back on the floor. Chris heads upstairs. Chris advances with gun drawn. She sneaks along the walls and continues upstairs. She flings the attic door open. Monty comes down the stairs. Chris fires. Monty falls and fires. Chris falls back over the banister. She passes out. Monty winces. His eyes grow big. He tightens mouth and rises off the stairs. Monty points the gun over the wooden railing at an empty floor. He heads downstairs. Tim spots a gun nearby. He raises his head and attempts to reach it. Monty appears and stands near Tim's feet. They lock eyes.
That would be mine.
Monty snatches the bandana and points gun at Tim.
Drop it! I said drop it!
Chris behind Monty at a distance.
Put it on the ground now!
Monty straightens. Chris tremors. The kid points the gun at Chris. George appears in the alley, gun pointed forward.
Chris, stop!
Chris swallows and eyes Monty.
Put the gun on the ground, Monty!
Okay.
Put it down!
Monty holds up the gun. He begins to spin around, then bends.
Putting it down.
He jolts. Chris shoots Monty 4 times, then rushes to Tim.
Hang in there.
She puts cell phone to her ear.
Shots fired, officer down. 2302 Tenderbrook Lane. Haul ass! Hey, just hang in there, okay? You hear me okay?
She helps Tim's head up.
You used your cell phone.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Chris smiles at him. Forensics team in white hazmat suits around the house. Chris stands around. Arnold and Cortez appear.
Okay. Okay, we gotta get you down to the station so we can get your official statement. Can you walk?
Probably shouldn't.
I'll see if the EMTs have a wheelchair.
Cortez leaves.
Did you find the stuff?
Yeah, all of it. You got him. Hey, get these off her, please.
Tim and I did. I hope the department takes it easy on him.
They don't want the bad press of going after a cop who caught a serial killer, a child serial killer. Chris, we just didn't see it.
You would have eventually.
Yeah, but how many more victims would there have been?
An officer uncuffs Chris. Cortez helps her get into the wheelchair.
You did good here.
Chris nods. Cortez grabs the wheelchair.
Hey. Your dad would have been proud.
Chris and Arnold exchange nods. A bulletproof vest peeks out from under her top that bears holes. Chris is wheeled out by Cortez, followed by Arnold. Cruiser lights flash in the dark ahead. Hazmat suit-clad people roam around the house. Cut to black. Credits roll. Directed by Craig Moss, written by Brian Dick, produced by Stan Spry and Eric Scott Woods, co-produced by Brian Dick, executive producers, Stephanie Slack, Fernando Sue, and Carla Woods, line producer, Kelly Kay. Music by David Findlay, cinematography by Paul Marshall, film editing by Josh Noyes. Starring Fiona Gubelman as Christine McCullers, Scott Bailey as Monty Fellon, Drew Fuller as Tim, Laura Nemi as Janet, Heather Mazur as Cortez, Joseph C. Phillips as Arnold, Cole Edwards as Stevie, John Lee Ames as Kyle, Chase Cortese as Dustin. Steve Hart as George, additional credits roll. We'll be right back. white rhombus folds into an origami plane, it flies and rests next to a white word in capitals, cartel. A view of calm sea surface leads to cloudy horizon with sun behind a small rock island. It turns into a painting against a black background with words underneath, Marvista Entertainment.